You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Hey, are you a business owner, entrepreneur, or professional? If so, we want you to apply to be a featured guest on our show. My name is Adam Torres, and I host the Mission Matters series of podcasts. I've recorded over 3,000 episodes, and we are just getting started. How do you know if you'd be a good guest to be on the show? Well, only one way to find out, and that's to apply, but I'm going to let you in on a little secret. We want guests that have a story to tell, guests with a brand, a product, or a service that can benefit my audience of listeners. If this sounds like you, go to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. I'd love to talk to you and get to know more about your story. Again, head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, now let's get into the show. Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to apply to be a guest on the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to Apply. All right, so today I have Ronald Stein and Todd Royal on the line, and they are co-authors of the 2022 Pulitzer Prize-nominated book, Clean Energy Exploitations. First off, guys, I just have to say, welcome on the show.
Adam, glad to be aboard.
Glad to be here. Thank you, Adam.
All right. So first off, Ronald, we've worked together before and we've been on the show. For people that have been following for a long time, they may remember some of our previous interview and work together. So first off, man, it's just great to reconnect from you. I believe you're out in Vegas today, right?
Big conference in Las Vegas. Yes.
Awesome. And looking forward also to getting to learn more about you, Todd. I've heard about you in the past. Ronald mentioned some things about his other co-author. And I'm like, well, when are we going to get this other co-author on the line already? So I'm glad that I was able to catch you both at the same time and at the same conference, which we're going to get further into that in a moment. But we'll start this show the way we start them all, with our Mission Matters Minute. So at Mission Matters, our goal is to amplify the stories of entrepreneurs, experts, and individuals that have really a mission to share. So that's what we do here today. What mission matters to the two of you?
Energy literacy is what matters to us because energy is very complicated, but we try and do our op-ed articles in our books in layman's terms to... We want to basically get everybody to the point they can feel comfortable talking about energy literacy at the dinner table.
Yeah. For me as well, besides energy literacy, is billions of people in the world currently do not have electricity. 2 billion people have no access to electricity. The other 2 billion don't even barely have enough that would power a refrigerator, let's say in the United States or Europe. Pointedly, 600 million in Africa have no electricity. So for me, the mission that matters is that in my lifetime, I want to see those billions of people have the exact same reliable and resilient electricity that all of us currently have.
Man, I love bringing mission-based individuals and organizations on the line, really to share why they do what they do and, you know, what gets them going every day. So I think the obvious here is you've co-authored, you know, 3 books together. So, I mean, I've co-authored books with individuals, but never 3. And I'm like, first off, you got to really like each other and have an aligned mission, obviously. Mm-hmm. But other than that, let's start from the beginning. Like, how did you two, you know, meet and really get on this path of collaborating with each other?
Well, we both write op-ed articles, and I commented on a couple of Todd's articles, and he commented on a couple of mine. And we wound up getting connected, and it's been downhill ever since.
And then Ron had reached out to me, too, with a group called the American Society of Civil Engineers. Mm-hmm. He was chairing an infrastructure report on energy and electricity for California. He calls me up, and I had to say, Ron, you do know I'm not an engineer, right? So I'm a guy with a public policy degree and an economics degree. So I'm civil, but I'm certainly not an engineer. So he said, would I come be a part of this? And then it really kind of branched out further. Well, then he said, okay, for the committee, Todd, why don't you be the person that looks into what it would take to build a new electrical grid for California? And we worked we just worked really well together. And so that's how really it grew. And then I approached him on the first book, which is called Energy Made Easy. And I said, hey, I've got this idea for a book, energy literacy. It also has to do with, let's just take separate topics. So it's not a book that flows, but all these separate topics. You're an engineer. You have all this knowledge. Why don't we try to do this together? And he goes, well, I've never written a book. And I said, well, neither have I. So we thought, you know, what better way to do it than let's jump in the deep end and see what happens. And it worked out really well.
And that's amazing. The book's got all 5-star ratings. So it was a pat on the back for a job well done.
Yeah.
I provide the engineering side of it. He's the political side of it. And between the two of it, we pretty much cover all bases of energy that's being covered in the press.
Absolutely. Days.
So we're definitely going to go deep into the energy field, and we're going to, of course, get far into the book. But just a quick sidebar, because there's a lot of other mission-based entrepreneurs and just people that want to make a difference out there. And I have a preference to books. I mean, we're publishers. But that being said, like, I always like to get third party so people know I'm not just trying to sell books, right? Like, what is the importance of getting your message out, Ben, through books? Like, how has that helped? Because I'm always telling people, if you have a message, you have something to do, you don't have to go to a publisher. You can do it yourself. It doesn't matter, but get the book out there. That's my thing. However you get it out there. So what has been your experience in using a book to get your message out there?
It's been very successful. The op-ed articles we write complement what goes in the book, and the book complements more op-ed articles. The latest book, Clean Energy Exploitations, yes, it's been nominated. We're real proud of that, you know, for a Pulitzer Prize. I want to say it's not the literary that was nominated, because Todd and I are still trying to master the English language. it was the message, the clean energy exploitations, because you got two different societies in the world. You got healthy and wealthy countries, and then you have the rest of the world. And interestingly, about 80% of the world, that's a big number, because there's 80 billion people in the world. Well, 80%, which is more than 6 billion, they're living on less than, they can barely subsidize themselves out of a paper bag. And then you've got the healthy and wealthy countries that are going green and getting all the press. And the book's message is, we are, you know, to get the exotic minerals and metals to support wind and solar and EV batteries, those exotic minerals and metals are coming from developing countries that have yellow skin, brown skin, black skin people, and they have no environmental controls and no labor controls. So the environmental degradation going on around the world and humanity atrocities, that's the message in the book. That's the clean energy exploitations, that the healthy, wealthy countries are taking advantage of the developing countries. And that was the reason you got nominated for the Pulitzer Prize.
And, you know, with a book too, Adam, is that you can go so much deeper than saying, okay, I'm getting something published in a magazine or a newspaper that's 750 words. Sometimes now they're 500 words. At most, you'll get 1,000 words. We're looking at doing a book that's got hundreds of pages. We source the heck out of this. I think there's over 900 sources in this book alone. So you can factually look at somebody and go, here's what's going on. Here's what's going on with dark-skinned people, that they are being exploited. So what a book allows you to do is go, okay, here's energy literacy. And then our second book, well, it's called Just Green Electricity. So here's what's going to happen to an electrical grid if you just use these renewables. And now we're going to get into the people story. Now we're going to tell you about people that look like the cover of this book.
Yeah.
Children, people that can't defend themselves. I always looked at this really saying, what is the mission of going? We are trying to give a voice to the voiceless. We are trying to give a defense to the defenseless, that they deserve the exact same shot that all of us deserve. When we went through our industrial revolution, which was a coal plant, a natural gas-fired plant, a nuclear plant, a car that runs on gasoline, houses that take oil, all the things that we get to be married, have children, go to school, live lives, travel, you know, Vegas, baby, Vegas, that's where we are right now. Well, I had to go get on an airplane to get here. And what a book allows you to do is to deep dive into that, as opposed to going 3 or 4 sentences. Well, we can give you 4 chapters on that. We can give you 120 pages, let's say, and then it's all heavily sourced. So it's whether, you know, talking to somebody like you, Adam, let's say we're at a, you know, talking to academia, like Ron said, people around the kitchen, you know, the kitchen table, or with everything going on right now about going green. And it makes people go, well, what does all that actually mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so then that's what a book allows you to do that you're not allowed to do just off an op-ed article, or frankly, even a speech before hundreds of people, which we both have had the opportunity to do. So a book really allows you to deep dive much better than the other venue. The other avenues are fantastic, mm-hmm. but there's nothing like a book.
Love it. I appreciate that. And I tell people this all the time. And I just, that's why I have to get that out whenever I have authors, good. Especially authors that are doing multiple books, because it's not taking away from anything else. Social media, videos, as you mentioned, articles, blog posts, like all these different things, they all have their place. But books just have, I mean, they, people read them at home, they put them on their desk, they have them, they don't throw them away. They let other people use them, like things like that. Like, I think it just spreads the message long term. So I think this is awesome. Changing gears a little bit. We mentioned a couple times you're in Vegas. I want to go further into this part. So you're at the Heartland Institute's 14th International Conference on Climate Change. I believe there's 300 plus leaders out there. And tell me if I got the name right of the conference. First of all, it's a long name there. So you get it right. All right.
You got it right.
All right. Fantastic. But tell me a little bit more about the conference, because there is significance there. Other, I like to think that both of you flew together to just do this interview, but there is significance as to why you're in Vegas. So tell us a little bit more about the conference.
Well, the conference is comprised of international leaders all over the world that are addressing climate change and energy literacy. And like I say, we comment on their articles, they comment on our articles. Mm-hmm. And since COVID is almost over, this is a great opportunity to physically meet them.
Yeah.
You know, we talk to them, email them, but this is a phenomenal networking event. And the exciting thing is, most of the attendees have written books. Many have written multiple books. Mm-hmm. I'm really not sure how many have Pulitzer Prize nominated books.
Yeah.
But we're excited about that. And each of the 300 attendees is getting a free copy of that book. And so we'll, like you say, we're connected internationally to a lot of people in trying to provide energy literacy to the public and put some common sense into what you read about in the press.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think, too, at this conference, you know, it's such a political word. Oh, my God, climate change, climate change. But people go, what exactly does that mean? What is global warming?
Mm-hmm.
What is anthropogenic global warming? Well, what I tell anybody is that there is now this foundational assumption that what we are currently doing, video, flying here, staying in a hotel, running an air conditioner, we are cooking the earth. But in actuality, nothing could be farther from the truth. And I'm not a denier, and I'm not trying to say, oh my gosh, President Biden is a bad man.
Yeah.
No, let's look at it factually. If we really want to be all deep and eggheady about this, let's use the scientific method.
Mm-hmm.
Let's actually go back and go, well, okay, if we are cooking the earth, then what are the solutions? Because there are solutions. What are things we can do? What are things that we have tried in the books and we try to do individually and together to say, let's factually look at, has the earth been cooking? Is this the warmest it's ever been? No. Is it the coldest? No.
Yeah.
Is it the, we're all dying because of wildfires and the oceans are rising? That's simply not true. So then you're basing life and energy policy. You're basing your entire life on something that can be mitigated, something that can be, where did technology, I mean, look what we're doing right now. We are talking, it's incredible.
Amazing.
Everything with via Zoom, via iPads, our phones. I always say this, there's more power in this iPhone I have than they had launching rockets to the moon in the Apollo space program.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be cataclysmic. And that's where we say, let's have a little energy literacy here.
Mm-hmm.
Let's sit back. So I'll take a big, giant, deep breath and say, how much has it warmed versus other times? And then what are the things we can do to work together and bring literacy to bring solutions and answers to these issues to make sure, again, these billions of people get electricity and they have energy, they have power, and they have life.
So speaking of solutions, I think that's a great transition to go to the main event. So to talk about the book, so Clean Energy Exploitations. I guess I'll start with, what was some of the inspiration behind this third book? Like, and what led that dialogue?
Well, the dialogue was the exploitations. We knew what was going on around the world, because there's no silver bullet answer to the energy situation. And there's a we tend to be agnostic. We want to share both sides of the story, because when you pick a winner, you have unintended consequences. You know, there's a place for solar, the place for wind, the place for EV batteries, but there's no one winner. And going to wind and solar, which breezes in the sunshine, it only produces electricity. And the thing that was very confusing among the politicians, the press, everybody, is they talk about renewable energy as we replace fossil fuel energy. But Adam, that's not possible, because renewable energy is not renewable energy. It's renewable electricity. Because the only thing breezes and sunshine can do is produce electricity. On the other hand, go back to 1900. Before 1900, we had no medical industry. We had no electronics. We had no communications. We had no militaries. And everything changed in 1900 when we invented the automobile and the airplane. And we really started discovering what fossil fuels could do. And the thing that really came out of fossil fuels was not the fuel, not the fuel for the automobile, the trucks, you know, the airlines and the merchant ships. The thing that was most valuable out of a barrel of crude oil was the oil derivatives that get manufactured. And those derivatives are used to make the 6,000 products we have today that we did not have before 1900. And that's the message that we're really trying to get through is, you know, you really can't live without oil, because without oil, you know, a prehistoric man lived without oil. I don't want to go back to that level of
living.
For me, you know, Ron approached me about doing this third book, and I was a little reticent. And then once he started going, okay, Todd, remember what we talked about in our first two books? And then I kind of started, he sent me some things. I started doing some further research, and it started to become very personal.
I have two
small children. If you look on the cover of that book, there's a man pointing a gun at people in the Congo to mine cobalt. Cobalt's a rare earth mineral that has to be in your iPhone, your Android phone, has to be in an EV, an electric vehicle, a solar panel, and a wind turbine will not work without cobalt. And so that became personal to me. I went, whoa, wait a minute. I also come from a very lower middle class family. My father was in the sheet metal industry. And so you look at these things and you go, these are workers and children being exploited. And what are they being exploited for? So a white male billionaire in the United States and Europe can get more taxpayer money. And then you go to the engineer side, and the engineer's looking at me going, Todd, it can't really work all the time because of these constraints. So it isn't my emotions here. It's the engineer going, hey, this isn't going to work. But then you bring in the emotion of going, well, wait a minute. I have a gun pointed at a small black child because... you need a taxpayer subsidy for a solar farm in the middle of Virginia or Texas or France. It became very personal to me. And then, of course, once you start to see where you get all these rare earth and exotic minerals, it's places like China. It's places like the lithium triangle in South America. It's places like the Congo. And you look up and these people are being, Adam, they're being exploited. And in many ways, I can remember growing up, my father being laid off. My father just wanting an extra quarter or dollar an hour. And it just became something for me where I felt like I had to write the book. And it was also the hardest thing that I've ever had to write. Every word seemed to be agonizing, because the more and more I got into this, the more and more you're going, like Ron said earlier, people that are black, brown, and yellow, they are being exploited. And in many ways, we are returning to a colonial time where we're going to take all of your rare earth and minerals so somebody driving an EV in Paris, Los Angeles, or New York can feel good about themselves And that just, that bothers me to the pit of my soul. And that, that is another mission where I said, no, the mission is to get this story out here and to say, to give these people who are being exploited, they need a voice.
Yeah.
And we have the expertise and, you know, like Ron says, we're trying to master the English language, but we can, we can get this out here. And that's, so that's one of the one of the biggest reasons and a multitude of really emotional and personal reasons of why I wanted to write this book.
Adam, one other thing. I was playing golf a couple months ago, and the three guys I was playing with all had EVs. About the fourth hole, if I had an EV, and I said no, and I would never have one. And they looked at me and said, well, why not? And I said, for ethical reasons.
Wow.
Because I know where the battery came from.
Yeah. And it's, if I can add to the same thing, I've got a dear friend with a Tesla. It's a sedan and it drives incredible. And it's, it's rated the number one high performance sedan in the world. And he said, he goes, oh man, don't you love this? And don't you want this? And I said, no. And I said, because unfortunately the battery that's underneath here, which weighs over 1,000 pounds, has no way to be recycled. I said, this is a blood mineral. You have, you have blood. This is a blood battery right now. And we talked about that in the book where we said, you know, there was blood diamonds, you know, the Leonardo DiCaprio movie. Well, we have proved in this book, these are blood minerals. And so until you can clean up that supply chain, which the United States actually has that, there are laws in place that say we have to know not just where a diamond comes from, but all these rare earth exotic minerals that are needed for this quote unquote clean energy transition. That we're going like this. Well, you know, I didn't see it.
Yeah, so, I get it.
Yeah, I'm with Ron. I went, love the way this Tesla drives, but make no mistake, there's blood on your hands right now.
And that's a, that's one of the points that you make in the book when you get into blood minerals and that thought, and you think about like what that looks like. So I feel like another big thing of the book and getting this information out there is that like people don't know. Like the people that were driving those EVs, the people that are driving these cars and these other vehicles don't really know. So I feel like as we have more of these conversations, we have these dialogues that really opens up the opportunity for change and for different policies and just for a different conversation to start. What do you think that kind of looks like going forward? Because it's hard, right? Like we've been hearing things about like, and I mean, think about how long it took for like diamonds and things like that. You said, great, great point you make about the movie that came out a long time ago. I remember watching it though. And that was one of my first educations on that. I kind of known the term, but I didn't really know, right? So like even just that change is different. But like when you think about as these batteries and these other things are, becoming more and more mainstream and the marketing around them and the other things that are happening, right? So how does this conversation kind of change or start to change things? We know nothing happens immediately, right? But how does that begin?
Well, as Todd mentioned, there are laws that require transparency and it's not being transparent to the users. And the book was a way of trying to make it transparent. You know, it's great to be nominated for Pulitzer Prize. I hope we make the final list. I hope we, you know, win, but I hope we win primarily for the reason to expose it and to make it transparent to the public that, you know, if you're driving an EV or you're looking at a wind turbine or solar panel, this is where it's coming from. And that's the main mission. You know, I want to win the Pulitzer Prize and get a pat on the back. But I think it would accelerate and bring it more to the public that this was a reason. That was a reason it was nominated because of the message. So like I said, we're just trying to promote that message out there and let people know. And, you know, like I say, if you're fine with, you know, exploiting people, you know, in developing countries, that's your decision. But we just want to let you know this is what it's taking to make your EV battery or your solar panel.
And also too, Adam, is there are more people. There are more people that are finally beginning to talk about this. People like Michael Schellenberger, Bjorn Lomberg, one of the founders of Greenpeace, Patrick Moore. But then you're also starting to see even mainstream places like the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, I think even Der Spiegel, Le Monde. I've seen things in the South China Post before, which is talking about what's going on in China right now. With there's over 2 million Muslims that have been enslaved in the country. And they know that whatever they've been put in re-education camps, not unlike Jewish people back in Nazi mm-hmm. Germany. And they are, incidentally, they're making solar panels. And it's wow. known right now that pretty much any solar panel coming out of China, certainly the ones that are going to the European Union, have come from slave labor. People that have been forcibly taken from their homes based upon religious beliefs, based upon they would not bow down to the Chinese Communist Party. That's the reason you write this book. That's the reason you put this out there. This opens it up. And like you said, it's a long process.
Yeah.
What honestly will probably do it would be something like a Hollywood movie, a Bollywood movie, let's say a movie that came out of France or Great Britain that won international awards and went to like the Cannes Film Festival, that would literally, instead of Blood Diamond, which again, I say was such a great movie, and he really highlighted that fact in the movie, you'd see something called, you know, Blood Minerals, and you would really begin to look at it. And, you know, Michael Moore did a documentary a little over a year ago called Planet of the Humans, where he excoriates wind turbines, solar panels, electric vehicles, and batteries at utility scale, batteries you put on electrical grid, for the very reasons that we're saying that whether you're, you know, of the Islamic faith over in China, whether you're just a little black child who happens to be born in the wrong part of the world in the Congo, you have blood on your hands. These are blood minerals. And so what you do, you hope the U.S. begins to enforce the laws that are in place. Like Ron said, California has those transparency laws. The United States has those transparency laws. Certainly the European Union does. And so if you're going to use this, then you need to know exactly where is this lithium, cobalt, neodymium, copper, zinc, and all the other rare earth exotic minerals that make this up. Where's this at? Is it coming up from the barrel of a gun? Is it coming from an enslaved Muslim in China? Or is it coming from someone who has environmental controls and labor controls from the lithium mountain up in North Carolina? There's a real difference. That's coming from North Carolina, or that's coming from China.
So obviously this book, you know, there's going to be two sides to this, and you're and the other side of it, obviously there's going to be just like anything. What kind of response have you been receiving from this as you've gotten it out there? You've gotten the information into, you know, people's hands that maybe didn't have it before. Like, what kind of responses have you been getting?
More and more followers. That's for sure.
I figured.
More complimentary comments. And I know when Todd and I do our op-eds, because we're so connected internationally, they're getting exposed probably to 500,000 people. And, you know, people have their networks that they're forwarding it off to. So we're slowly educating the populace. There's an old cliche, you know, how you eat an elephant, you know, one bite at a time. And, you know, how do you educate 8 billion people?
Yeah.
Same thing, one at a time.
Yeah.
And so that's our mission.
There's been really two interesting responses, Adam. Number one, people that let's say are going to be more, they still want to use, you know, fossil fuels. They're not as much in renewables. So you would go, oh, they tend to be a little more your mindset. There's been almost a bit of a hostility. People will look at the book and it's almost they have a hard time believing it because this book is such an expose. So that's been a really interesting thing on my end, is having a pushback. This pushback of going, is it that bad? No. You're being inflammatory. You know, the whole cover of the book, you're being inflammatory. You're inflammatory. And it's like, no, that's a photo that's based off an Amnesty International report. So let's be real here. That's based off real research.
Yeah.
A real positive part is that we've been contacted to possibly begin from a really good production team and director about beginning a whole podcast network based on this, where we would be filming podcasts and we would both begin to be doing our own shows separately and then even together. So there's been a real interesting, what I would call almost a cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
But then there's also been this incredible opportunity that we're currently working on that's come our way.
Yeah, because that's the way I see it, by the way. So what I see this book as is, I see it as, obviously it's building on some of your previous works, but I mean, in terms of, I see it as a movement. Like, it's really a movement.
Yeah.
Like, it takes like anything, right? The old saying, right? It takes community to do this. And now it takes more than a community. It takes a movement, because everybody's competing for eyeballs and different things like this. And I would argue many times for things that are nowhere near as important as what you're both working on. So, I mean, just in general, like we're all competing for space and attention. And that's why I was really excited to have you both on the show to help do what we could do to get the message out there. But really it is a movement, and it's building, and it takes more. And you both being at that conference, handing out that, or getting the book into the hands of all of those different world leaders and other people, like that's kind of like the tentacles, if you will, or that go out into many different places. When people go home, they now have that information as well. And now it spreads. So in being stewards of this movement, so to speak, from your end and leading this book, like what's next for the two of you? Like what's next? What's on the horizon?
Well, I think it's going to be the podcast. Like you say, we continue to do op-ed articles. You know, every time President Biden opens his mouth, I got to write another article. Mm-hmm. Every time, you know, California Governor Newsom opens his mouth, I got to write another article.
Yeah.
No, it's like I said, we're just trying to spread the word. And we believe the podcast is going to be a way to do it, because we really don't want to lecture. We want to have a conversation.
Yeah.
Like a fireside chat, because there's two sides to every story, because the people we want to interview have their views and just ask them probing questions about the unintended consequences that they're not talking about, and the transparency of what's going on that they're not talking about. And so we just want to have a conversation, fireside chat, and it's all going to be geared around energy literacy. And hopefully the audience will be able to comprehend, because like you say, there's no silver bullet answers to these questions. You can't pick a winner. You know, if they basically say, where, you know, everybody's got to drive an EV, well, there's consequences to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's really this podcast, possibly, you know, really begin to put out content on even daily basis, smaller content, weekly basis, begin to do a show that's, you know, one that would be 20 minutes, another one that could be an hour long, and then continuing to write. Certainly, as we're seeing right now, this whole energy crisis globally, I would certainly make the argument to you that energy crisis has become because you've tried to move over to wind turbines and solar panels. And without thinking about it, as Ron just said, you haven't looked at the unintended consequences. So it's writing about those kind of issues, looking about the podcast, and then also speaking engagements as well that we have.
No, I think that's great.
When Todd and I do speaking engagements, you know, we want to talk energy literacy, and the public, you know, may be intimidated on what to ask about energy.
Yeah.
And so we basically plant, you know, about 30 questions with them. So they can ask the question, and then it opens up the avenue for us to address, you know, what they want to hear about. Because just to give a speech about something they don't want to hear about is not very productive.
Yeah.
So if they want to know about, you know, EVs or, you know, transparency, you know, whatever the interest is, we've got a bunch of questions, or, you know, for the U.S., international questions, and just to stimulate the conversation. And when they ask it, we'll basically address that subject, and that may promote, you know, another question to come from the audience. So it's all geared around energy literacy, and we're just trying to stimulate the conversation.
There's a funny story. One of my dear friends, a former Marine, just very, man, this guy just, he thinks so literal.
Yeah.
And he looks at me and he goes, "What exactly do you do?" It's such a plain question. We're together and he goes, "You talk about these grids and fossil fuel, but like, can you just tell me exactly what it is you do?" And he looked at me like with a book, and he goes, "So you want to do some podcast and do what?" I go, "Kurt, it's meant for somebody like you." Because I said, "I can sit here and bore you to death with an electrical grid." And he goes, "Yeah, please don't do that." He goes, and he goes, "Here's what I'm going to tell you how to do it, Todd." And I go, "Why don't you tell me?" He goes, "Why don't you just call it Turn the Lights On? Because all I really care is, can I put gas in my car and turn the lights on? Because I'm a really busy guy with two kids, a dog, and I'm about to get married." And to me, that's like, that is the perfect story about 99.9% of the world, because that's what people, that's what I care about. Mm-hmm. I'm just caring about going, I got to get breakfast for my kids and we got activities and I've got work and does my, you know, I got to plug my computer in if I want to write all this stuff. So let's just make this easy and let's make this as simple as possible. Somebody can understand. I just love that he was like, what is it you exactly do again? So yeah, that's really what we're looking at as far as moving forward and on their rise, and to bring this conversation down to where somebody can understand it. Cause it's going to get emotional enough.
Oh,
there's enough, and there's enough facts we can put in there to glaze your eyes. And I can show you three books that have, I think it's over 2,000 sources now between the three books, but can I just do this? Can you and I just connect? Can I empathize with where you are and understand where you are and hopefully give you a little education literacy in the process as the world is quote unquote transitioning to all this?
And I like this idea of really thinking about the broader concept here, which is energy literacy. So a lot of things under that umbrella. This book focuses on one particular thing, but the whole idea of energy literacy, I feel like this is, it just has opportunity. So meaning for whether it's through the school system or otherwise, like just like we think about the way when you first, when this interview was first proposed to me and I was looking at the content and I was looking at things like, and looking a couple of levels deep, and I was thinking about it and I'm like, okay, like at one point, financial literacy wasn't something that was really taught just in general, wasn't like you had to, you had to learn it yourself. Even the idea of a financial advisor or financial advisory thing. And that wasn't then that, that I don't even think financial planning, that term wasn't even invented till like the 70s. Like, so that's very new. It's a very new concept. So the same way we think about, in my opinion, like that type of literacy and how important it is, what could be more important than energy literacy and learning about how to, because we all share this planet. I don't care what anybody says. That's the one thing we all share and we should all care about.
We're all connected here this way. Yeah.
But for my lifetime and for my personal preference, I'd like to protect this as much as possible than versus go to another one right this moment. That's my personal preference. So if we're talking energy literacy, I'm like, can we do a little bit more there?
Yeah. Now, on energy literacy, you know, you read in the paper all the time about Biden wants to eliminate oil and he's banned fracking. He's basically stopping oil exploration.
Yeah.
He's killed the Keystone pipeline. Mm-hmm. Now, if he gets his way, there's consequences.
Yeah.
Because getting rid of oil, well, you've eliminated the supply chain to the refineries.
Yeah.
If there's nothing to refine, there's no need for the refineries. Mm-hmm. Well, if you get rid of the refineries, then you see the unintended consequences. Because, as I mentioned before, half of a barrel of crude oil is for fuel and half of it's for the derivatives.
Mm-hmm.
And if these refineries can't make the derivatives because they have no crude oil to manufacture, then there's not going to be any iPads and iPhones, TVs, electronics. The medical industry goes away. Like I say, there's a lot of industries that get impacted severely without oil. So there's a place for everything, you know, for oil, for, you know, solar, wind, EV batteries, and you know, if you're a family, have a big family, you need a big vehicle, you need a workhorse, you know, an EV may not be right for you. You know, if you're retired and have short distances to go, an EV may be the best thing for you.
Yeah.
You know, Adam, I like your theme of like we're all in it together. it's this planet. And one of the things when you think about energy, and you go, okay, there's 6,000 of these products from plastics to toothpaste that come from this barrel of crude oil. The one thing you look up this COVID, what's it done? It's made us kind of look at the entire world. So then you go, now we have this vaccine. Well, interestingly enough, there's this fantastic article. I think it was in April of 2020 or 2021. I honestly can't remember. And it was in the Wall Street Journal. And it said, big oil to the rescue. It basically said you would not have this vaccine without oil.
Wow.
And so when you really think about this whole concept of literacy, well, I look at it and we've looked at it, and I would even say I'm connecting a lot of pieces here. When we think about this podcast, Well, at one point we didn't have, let's say, an HGTV, this kind of home literacy. You didn't have CNBC, this literacy of money, as you said, financial planning.
Yeah.
Well, we felt, and one of our big goals would ultimately be, could there ever be a television station that's just on energy?
Hmm.
Because what you could do an entire show of going, okay, Adam, you're a guy, you want to get rid of all of it. You support the president, you support his policies and his party. Mm-hmm. Okay, did you want that vaccine or did you not want that vaccine?
Yep.
And you may go, well, I'm anti-vaccine. Okay. That's right. We'd go, okay, that's great. Well, then, Adam, we've got a public health issue, though. Doesn't mean I'm pro-vaccine or anti-vaccine, but there's a lot of people who need this vaccine.
Yeah.
Most of these people that we're about to walk around a crowded city in Las Vegas, they've probably got a vaccine or they've got a mask on. Well, that mask came from a barrel of crude oil.
Yeah.
In other words, it's this interconnection. And mm-hmm. we're energy literacy. Yes, we want to try to do a podcast. And yes, it'd be great to win a Pulitzer. And those would all be wonderful things. But it's more saying that we're all connected together here. And the bad part of COVID, we obviously know what it is. Mm-hmm. Maybe if there's one positive, it's maybe made us look up and go, we all got to share this place together. And if we're going to put this into our arm or this pill, well, it's got oil in there.
So
yes or no, you want those roughnecks over in the Permian Basin of Texas or Saudi Arabia or up in Norway. Do you want them to get that oil? And then do you want it to go to the refinery or do you not? Mm-hmm. So I really love that theme that you just brought up of that we're all connected here. And then let's look at this planet right now. We can go explore others and that's great.
Yeah.
But let's remember this planet as well.
That's great. Well, I have to tell you both. First off, again, it's been great having you on the show today and learning more about clean energy exploitations and just even to be nominated. I mean, what an honor. I'm just really excited for both of you. And then to do all the work that you're doing. And I want to see the podcast. And after you get that podcast up and going, I'm more than happy to help you promote it. I definitely want my audience to go check that out. So always love to support the podcast community in general. Anybody that's ever been on my show, it's a podcaster, knows that. But this is even just a step above, like to move the needle a little bit on this issue and thinking about blood minerals and just energy literacy, just in general, it's a big deal. So if somebody's watching this right now and they want to learn more about your work, the previous books, of course, but also the current one, Clean Energy Exploitations, what's the best way for them to follow up and to connect and just to follow both of your writings in general?
Connect to energyliteracy.net. Energyliteracy.net is the website. Our books are there. Our op-eds are there. Click on, you get it instantaneous from Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's even available at Target.
Yes.
Just found that out. But energyliteracy.net. I would and ask, just send us an email. We'll add you to our op-ed, list and keep you up to date with the articles on energy literacy. And hopefully you'll be able to talk at the dinner table and, understand what is happening in the community around you and the world around you.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And last question, I have to do it because anytime anybody tells me that they might do something when it comes to a podcast, I got to put a little fire under them. When do you think you want to get that podcast launched? I'm throwing it out there.
I would say we'd like to try to get this launched before the end of the year.
Oh, that's soon. Oh, that's awesome.
My goal would be that the first content would be coming out in January. And then in addition to that, just to add, what I really want to begin to focus on within that podcast is this concept of these are blood minerals.
Hmm.
That's something, I don't want to make it too heavy.
Yeah. It is heavy though. It's okay.
It's heavy.
It needs to be said.
But it's so important as we are looking at an energy crisis globally right now, based on people thinking you can run the world on, the wind and the sun, but also what's inside of there and the exploitation that these are blood minerals. And so there's a little teaser for you for the podcast.
Fantastic. Well, I just have to say again, appreciate both of you coming on the show today and sharing more about the story, this journey of two individuals coming together and co-authoring now the third book and just really taking it and the idea of energy literacy to the next level and creating a community around it. That's not easy. It takes a lot of work, a lot of time. So I applaud both of your efforts on this. And to the audience, as always, really appreciate you tuning in. If this is your first time connecting and with us, don't forget, hit that subscribe button. We have many more mission-based entrepreneurs, executives, and experts coming on, and we don't want you to miss a thing. And I'll just say a final thing. I hope you both get some time to enjoy in Vegas, but really, it has been a pleasure having you both on the show. So thank you.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, Adam, very much.